Hello, everybody. It's 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia. I'm Pierre Robert, and welcome once again to another Pierre Presents right here at the Ardmore Music Hall. Our guests this afternoon are no strangers to Philly or to MMR. In fact, they've been with us many times. They hail from Bowling Green, Kentucky. Forming in 2006, they released their self-titled album in 2008 in the UK and the following year in the US. The new music kept coming. Thank You, Happy Birthday in 2011. Melophobia, 2013. Tell Me I'm Pretty in 2015, which incidentally won them the Grammy for Best Rock Album in 2016. And the Unpeeled record in 2017. But today is the day their new record, 13 songs long, called Social Cues, is released. If you've followed them, you know they've played all around the world. They've done all the big festivals, Lollapalooza, Bonnaroo, Coachella, Glastonbury, and more. Later this summer, they're going to do Woodstock 50. Also this summer, they'll be back in the Philly area in Camden, co-headlining with Beck, August 21st. Going to be a great show. But what's so cool is they've done the large stages, but stages like this or smaller is where they began, and that's where they've come to play for you right now. So it's my great pleasure to introduce them to you. We have Mathen Minster on keyboards, Jared Champion on drums, Daniel Titchener on bass, Nick Bockrath on lead guitar and vocals, Brad Schultz on guitar, and Matt Schultz on lead vocals. A great pleasure to welcome back to Philly and to MMR, KG Elephant.
Hey, you're one of the rare people that have gotten Mathen's name right.
Really?
Yeah. First yeah. time.
Cool. Do you go by Matt ever, or is it always Mathen?
No, you know, my grandpa called me Matt. He refused to even try to say it.
Oh, that's great. The last time you were on my show, we ended our conversation. You played a few songs for us in the studio. We ended the conversation, and I was able to get all of you to laugh, and we have video of it, which is up on our website. But I'm going to start the conversation this time with it. If you're in a band, and this is a tutorial, I guess is what you could call what you're about to hear, because every band, particularly the young ones, they go around, they go into a different town, the station invites them in, they go, hi, we're Brand X, and you're listening to Brand X Station. About 10, 15 seconds. Sometimes, when there are more people, it takes a little while. And so for the young bands that might be listening, here is Cage the Elephant's audio tutorial on how to do an MMR station ID.
Oh, God. Hi, this is Cage the Elephant, and you're listening to everything.
You say 99.3.
I thought you got three.
I know.
It's on the four.
Okay.
Shut up. Hi, this is KG Elephant, and you're listening to...
Nope.
Teacher, going slow. All right. 1, 2, 3. Hi, this is KG Elephant. You're listening to W3. No.
Shut up!
Hey, shut up. By the way, you're going like this.
It needs to be faster. It needs to be faster, dude.
I thought you played music.
Shut up!
We're speaking in Kentucky.
Faster.
Hi, this is KG Elephant. You're listening to everything that rocks hard.
Shut up. This is KG Elephant from Everything That Rocks 93.3.
No,
God.
KG
Elephant.
You're
ready? 1, 2, 3.
Hi, this is KG Elephant. You're listening to 93.3 WMMR Everything That Rocks.
At the end, you hear Matt go, that totally wasn't worth it. So, welcome back. We won't ask you to do that again.
I think we should.
I won't torture you like that. Before we get to the record, which is out today, I'd like to go back to the earlier days for just a moment or two. and talk about the writing process, because a writer gets an idea and you got to capture it, be it a melody or a lyric. And you were in construction, I believe you were a plumber, and the boss would not let you write anything down. And maybe if you had a cell phone, it was before the days where you could dictate on them. And so you had a unique way, particularly in one house you were working on, I guess in Bowling Green, to save those lyrics. Would you share that with us?
Yeah, I would get in trouble constantly for, like, writing lyrics or kind of getting distracted in many different ways. I had to pull this piping through the floors, and you pull it through the floor above into the unit that you're working in. And so I had to work on these big stilts. And I quickly realized that the boss couldn't see what I was doing when I was wearing the stilts. So I was up in the ceiling writing lyrics up in the ceiling. And also whenever I'd cut PVC pipe, when there were scraps, I would write lyrics on the PVC pipe. So then I would wait until everyone left the construction site. I'd sneak back in, put the stilts back on, and be like, okay, all right. Write it down. Okay, all right. I was like, oh, that one lyric is somewhere around here on a pipe. There's a piece of pipe. Oh, that was a good one. Not good enough to remember. F*** it.
Do you think if in that particular house, if someone is ever doing some remodeling, they take a wall out and they might still find your lyrics there?
Probably.
That would be the house to have.
No rest for the wicked, for certain.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, you had that idea, I think someone came up to you on the street, some crazy person was shouting. Is that how that song title came to be? And didn't you run and write it down somewhere?
No, it was actually while I was working. I was working with a gentleman who on the side was a drug dealer, or maybe on the side he was in construction. I don't know which was his main occupation. But either way, he was making money in two different work fields. Anyways, we were working together, and he would just constantly have all this grief for, like, living a double life or whatever. At least in his mind. And I had said something along the lines of, why don't you just, like, stop selling the drugs, and then your grief would be gone? And he was like, man, there's no rest for the wicked. And I was like, light bulb. I was like, so I'll take a dime back, but I'll be right back. Hold on 1 second. No. Now I'm joking.
That's excellent.
Matt actually hit both of those things in the wall, his dime bag and his lyrics. Yeah.
So, save that for later. Came back and say, oh, they drywalled it. Okay.
The band is so animated. How many of you have seen Cage the Elephant before? So some have and some haven't, which is also cool. But this gentleman is so animated on stage, and I've seen photos and I've seen you in concert when you've done a stage dive. And I'm wondering if for the uninitiated, which is most of us don't have the experience of diving into a crowd of adoring fans. What is that like?
Sorry, I was thinking about something else when you were asking me the question. I just want to say I don't do drugs anymore. except the ones that the doctor prescribes. Those are okay, right? I'm joking. That was a little cues.
What is stage diving like?
It's when it works, it's great. For the most part, it works, but there have been some times where it's been epic failures.
Well, Brad described one of those in an interview. I think you were opening for Queens of the Stone Age, and you're getting a break, and you're very excited. And did you not do a stage dive then?
I did. Actually, and I don't do drugs anymore. That was a joke.
I really don't.
So we were opening for the Queens of the Stone Age, and it was the first night of the tour. We're in Toronto. The only reason why we got that tour is because the only deal that we had signed up at that point was a publishing deal to a Canadian publishing company. And so Queens of the Stone Age thought that we were Canadian. So they're like, we need a good local band. Cage the Elephant. All right, let's take those guys out. So we're on tour with them. No one had ever heard of us in Canada. So we're sitting there, like, just making noise on the stage. And I'm like, I'm going to take this crowd. I'm going to take it right off the bat. So I run out on the stage. Before I ever sing a note, I'm in the air and flying through the air. And I look down to see that every single person in the audience is holding two red solo cups. And I was like, oh, crap. not good. And I was like, the Red Sea of solo cups parted. And I hit the ground so hard, my shoes flew off. I'm not even joking. But I didn't know that everyone had been given two free beers. And they're like, guy we don't know or beer we know so well. I'm going to have to go with the beer.
Matt actually tried to save himself and climb someone's back.
Yeah, I tried to save my pride. So I was like, I'm not going to go down like that. I can't just. So I climb up the tallest guy's back, and I'm like, trust fall swan dive.
And they parted again.
And they dropped me again, even harder.
We call those Spinal Tap moments. You don't have to be in a rock band, by the way, to have that happen. I mean, you could be at your house and walk into the wall. You know, well, I do anyway. Brad, you had a couple of interesting ones, one of which was at Lollapalooza, I believe, where you thought it would be a good idea to mix champagne and 90-degree heat and humidity in Grant Park.
Yeah, well, I was super nervous, and it was our first time ever playing Lollapalooza, and we're on a golf cart, and I was like, I'm going to kill the nerves. The only thing they could drum up was a bottle of champagne. So I literally chugged half of a bottle of champagne before we got on the stage. And the rest did not go very well. Yeah. It came up very quickly. On stage, as Matt chanted, Brad, don't throw up.
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah, we didn't have pyro, but we had Brad.
Why do you need pyro if you have projectile vomiting?
Exactly.
That's what I said.
It's punk rock special effects.
We are here with Cage the Elephant on 93.3 WMMR, and I want to talk about this new record, Social Cues. As I said, it's out today. We're very lucky that you've come here. Let's start with the single, Ready to Let Go. I think there comes a time in everybody's life where you realize you've got to make a change, and you're ready to do it. I think this song began in Pompeii. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was on a little trip, kind of backpacking around Italy, and had stopped off in Pompeii and visited the site at the base of Mount Vesuvius. And I don't know, I had a lot of things I was dealing with. It was a very turbulent year. And sometimes you take that grief and those troubles, and we conceal them within ourselves and then hold this heavy, heavy guilt for that or whatever. And I couldn't help but relate to the people who had been in Cast in Ash and feel that in the same way that I'd in some ways been paralyzed by life. So,
it's a great song. By the way, this record from start to finish is great. I mean, from the opening song, Broken Boy, to the closing song, Goodbye, there are 13 magnificent songs in an album form. And I always encourage listeners to buy the CD, or in a case of a cool band like this, they actually put out vinyl. Listen to the whole thing all the way through. It's so easy to listen to. It's a great piece of music as a piece. You guys also incorporated a lot of different sounds. I think, Brad, you play the mellotron on the opening song. Is that right?
That's actually Nick.
Oh, Nick. Okay.
Nick played the mellotron.
Nick, a very talented gentleman we're going to get to in a moment. But you added, like, symphonic sounds, so there seemed to be a concerted effort to add different textures musically.
Go ahead, Matt.
Don't fight. It's a brother band, remember.
Go ahead, Matt.
No, you're going to try to stop me again. No, working with John Hill, he's a producer that first off has worked with a crazily diverse array of different kinds of artists. And he very much plays the studio, and that was something we wanted to get into and not to be tethered so much to maybe instruments that we learned to compose on. And certainly not on instruments that are rooted in any sort of like idea of genre-based title or anything like that. We really wanted to play for the songs, and there was something that we'd been talking about, Brian Jones, right, on the song Under My Thumb, and how he'd walked over, and I think it was the xylophone, and just started playing a melody, which is now a legendary melody that we all know. But that if you get outside your comfort zone, you can open up and awaken this area of impulse and bring to life things that you never knew would be there.
Well, the fourth song on is an interesting song because I think you'd had it for a while. It's called Night Running, and you happen to have been working with a gentleman by the name of David Campbell, and I think you had come to a point where you couldn't figure out quite what to do with it, and so one of you came up with the idea, well, we know David Campbell's son, or maybe you didn't know him at the time, but maybe we could get this song to David Campbell's son, and maybe he could add something to it. Oh, who is David Campbell's son?
A fellow by the name of Beck.
There you have it.
We actually had no idea that David Campbell was Beck's father.
Oh, really?
When we hired him to do the string arrangements on the record, we didn't know until Beck had signed on to do Night Running, and then everything clicked.
I think many people may know, but David Campbell is a legend in his own right as a composer and an arranger. He works on films and records, and so we were overjoyed that David was interested in working with us, and
ended up getting a 2-for-1.
Yeah, exactly. We kept it in the family. But yeah, we had a real nice arrangement going, and the chorus was feeling really good, but I just couldn't find an approach for the verse. And Brad kind of secretly within himself was like, I feel like Beck would have the answer. And
did you know Beck?
We'd met him a couple times.
Yeah, we met him one time, maybe 3 months previously to him doing the track.
And then I'd met up with him again in Nashville and hung up.
So cool, because it came out great. You were really happy with it when he put his piece on it. And you're going to be touring with him this summer, and what I think Brad called, you want it to be like a mini festival. Would you see yourself doing songs together during the sets over the course of this summer tour?
There's been a lot of different ideas thrown around just to mix it up a bit.
Well, really, that's kind of where the idea of the tour was born. We were just trying to figure out a space to perform the song together, and through creative talks, which we'll see if that happens or not.
Cool. One more song I want to ask you about on the record is the last song on, and you've been talking about it quite a bit, and it's very personal, and I don't mean to pry into your life, but you've put it out there for the world to see and hear, and I think every single person can relate to it, because when I've gone through breakups, it's like ripping my heart out and watching it beat at the same time. But you could also apply this song to people who have passed, maybe to losing a job, any kind of a loss in your life. But the way that you sing it, every time I hear it, I get emotional even thinking about it. It's so powerful, so raw, but yet when you add those melodic touches, and I think there's a female voice that comes in, it's just...
That would be Madden.
Oh, was it? Was it really? I'm sorry. I thought I heard a woman in the background. I don't have the album credits.
You said
yet.
His name correctly, but then you just...
Yeah, I get it.
You got his voice totally wrong.
Okay. At any rate, so that totally blew the poignancy of the moment.
No, sorry.
But that's all right. We can edit that out. No, we won't. Well, I heard a lot of different things about it, but I heard that you were so overwhelmed that you only did one take, which is the take you used, and you did it in a particular physical position. Could you tell us about that?
The song actually, it was born out of a moment where a relationship was kind of deteriorating, but it was also confronting probably a lot of things that were going on at that time. It's been a particularly turbulent past couple years, lost a lot of friends, just a lot of friends, honestly. And so it was a means of closure, I guess, in some regards. And I don't know, I was just so heavily moved. I laid back on the floor, and we were just cutting it as a demo to see if it was going to work. And it was me and Matt and my woman. it was me and Matt. And I don't know. We did one take, and after that take, it was just kind of too much to handle at that point, and so we canceled the next 2 weeks in the studio. And little did we know that would actually be the take that made the record. So it wasn't just a demo. It ended up being on the album.
You sang the whole song laying on your back.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. It's so amazing. In one interview, you said, at first listen, it's easy to catch the grief and mourning and pain. But for me, when I listen to it, I hear an incredible amount of joy and hope. And I really hope that comes across. Whenever you're in a deep time of mourning, it doesn't negate the time of uplift, which I think is so cool.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you guys are familiar with this saying, but it's It's called a Bright Sadness. I think that there, it's easy to get caught up in the moment and focus on maybe one hue or shade of an emotional experience. But the truth is, there's so many different colors within everything that we experience. The underbelly of grief is joy, and vice versa. And so, like, you know, it's kind of like cheap thrills, right? You go to an amusement park and you're on a roller coaster. But I highly doubt that in the final throes of your life, you're going to be like, hey, do you remember that time on the roller coaster? No, you're going to think about the time where you were at a family member's funeral and your father took your hand or whatever. And those are the beautiful times in life and the times that times that hold real joy. So, yeah.
Such a great, great song. I want to just run by a couple of the members. Wake up over here, Jared. I wanted to ask you, because I had read, is it true on Shake Me Down that you play toy drums?
Yes.
So how did that come about? That's the worst f-ing answer in an interview. Are you having something? Yep.
It's like the first little like splashes at the beginning when they're just doing the guitar stuff. Tried them out and they sounded good in the track. That's the only toy drum part.
Yeah, the smaller drum set tends to sound a bit trashier, I guess. That's the reason we kind of used it.
It's funny, like in the studio, small instruments sound huge. Right. And
but
huge
it's our second album. We were experimenting with a lot of stuff. Our first album was completely written before we went to the studio, you know.
I just
we're
love
trying
that
everything.
Song.
Everything was new to us.
When it goes to even on a cloudy day, I could hear that chorus for another 5 minutes. Just it's something about it captures me to the degree that I'll play that song, Tom, sometimes on a cloudy day. Or listeners will text in and go, it's cloudy. You got to put on Shake Me Down. Also, Jared, were you not a member of your marching in the marching band at Greenwood High?
Yeah, absolutely. Swim team and soccer team.
Swim team and soccer team.
Still hold two swim team records.
You hold team
chess
records?
Team captain.
Are there any plaques with your name on it anywhere in the school?
There's a plaque with my name for the highest physics grade ever. My sophomore year. I don't know if it's still up. That was over 20
it's
years
not
ago.
Up.
Jesus.
I took it down and smashed it.
We're getting
it.
Old.
That's why Jared's answers are so short. Like,
Daniel, I wanted to ask you about your love of vinyl, because you talked about how cool it is to collect vinyl. Do you have a large collection?
Yes.
That's good. Were you... where were you on Record Store Day? I'm just curious. Do you celebrate Record Store Day at all?
Yes.
I also want to talk with Nick. Ladies and gentlemen, this guitar player happens to be from the Philadelphia area. Are you not?
Yes, sir.
I was doing research, as I told you before, and I Googled Nick, and up came a picture of alumni from the University of the Arts in Pennsylvania, the wonderful art school on Broad Street. And there's a picture of Cage the Elephant. It says, Nick, second from the left. And I'm going, that can't be right. Did you grow up here?
I grew up in Westchester, and then I lived in Philly. Yeah. I remember when this was Brownies. And, I lived in Philly for about 7 years until I moved to Nashville.
That's so cool. Well, yeah. Welcome back.
It's great to be back.
It's just great to have you.
And Nick was giving us all the pointers for Philly cheesesteaks.
Was he?
Where's the best one? Where's the second best one?
And Mathen, something I wanted to ask you. First of all, how long have you been with the band?
It's close to 6 years now.
Very cool.
August 3rd, 2013.
That's good.
He has it tattooed on his wrist.
Yeah. It just says, be perfect.
In one interview, I read that you were quite moved. I love audience and band connections when they come together. And I think you guys were in L.A., and some fans were waiting for you on the street, and they knew it was your birthday.
Yeah, that was really neat.
What happened?
They sang me happy birthday. I jumped on some people's shoulders, and they carried me around. And yeah, it was wild.
Now, that is fan-band interaction. And unlike our singer... He didn't get carried around and dropped.
No, they didn't drop me. But he had a spiky coat on, and I definitely got some cuts.
You guys also, Mathen also plays guitar, and I've seen video of you and Matt, I don't know if the rest of you guys were in it, at the Petty Tribute doing a pretty mean version of Breakdown. And there was some other little interview I saw where you guys were goofing around with some guy, and Mathen on guitar was... singing the beautiful Henry Mancini song, Moon River.
Yeah,
Would you like to do a little bit of that for us now?
Moon River.
We'll take it.
Come on, come on, keep going.
Wider than a mile. Yeah. I'm crossing you and stopping.
Do it, do it, do it.
You know what I just realized when you were talking about Madden playing guitar? I realized that it kind of hurts. I'm the third best guitar player in our band. I'm slowly slinking.
Some of the things that a lot of people don't know as well about our two new members is how much they contribute. What a blessing they've been to enrich our lives. And Mathern writes a lot of lyrics on the records as well and sings backup on everything. So everything that you hear, you probably hear Mathern's voice. That woman in the background is Mathern.
Actually, I look over at Titchener and I know exactly he's thinking, actually, I'm the third best guitar player.
I'm the best. We are speaking with the Cage the Elephant and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Ardmore Music Hall. Pierre Presents on 93.3 WMMR. We're on stage with Cage the Elephant. Just a few more quick questions. As I mentioned in the intro, you won the Grammy for Tell Me I'm Pretty, and you were all there. What did it feel like? What was that moment like?
I actually didn't even realize what was happening until Brad was already almost up to the podium. I was like, oh, that's Brad. Oh, my gosh. We want to be... My legs. Oh, I'm standing. Oh, I'm crying. Oh God, I'm crying. No, it was a shock.
We had the worst speech of all times.
Yeah.
Matt thanked his shoes. Somehow, I think Chance the Rapper. Yeah.
Like, me and Brad.
Words were just falling out of my mouth.
Oh my God.
Chance had just won an award. I was like, thank you, Chance, too, for our award.
Well, congratulations. It's very cool. Last thing, you're going to be at Woodstock. And as I mentioned, you've done all these festivals, Woodstock 50. When the first one came out, I don't think you were even alive. I don't know if the anniversary one in 94 or 99 had any resonance with you guys. Does the fact that this August, the 50th anniversary of arguably the first festival, with maybe exception of Monterey Pop, does that mean something to you guys? Does it hold a special place?
Absolutely. I remember growing up always, you know, you watch the legendary performances from Woodstock and have these wild dreams of doing the same. Of course, once you feel like maybe that opportunity is passed, you're like, well, you know, you can recreate that in other spaces. But the fact that they're bringing us for the anniversary, it's like, oh, wow, it's like a childhood dream coming true. So pretty cool.
Speaking of dreams, you as kids, you know, you dream of being rock stars. Maybe you play an imaginary broom as a guitar, or maybe you grab a soldering iron and think it's a microphone, which Matt actually did one time, only to burn his hand to pieces. But we have those dreams. You've done them. You've worked your ass off, and now you have the reality. How does it match up with the dream?
It's just about like when I grab the soldering iron. No, I mean, it's been an incredible blessing. It's very multi-layered, and hope to continue to make creative works. And as long as the audience will continue to accept it into their hearts, we'll keep making music and keep making music for ourselves, but also for the audience. And I don't know how to put it into words. It has been a wild experience.
It just goes to show you, if you play with fire and you get burned, sometimes you go back.
Yeah,
that burn feels good.
Yeah, okay. Nice.
All right. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Cage the Elephant. On 93.3 WMMR, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much for having us. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, you should crowd surf to the back.
What's that?
You should crowd surf to the back.
I'm not going to... Dude. All right. I am not going to crowd surf, but let me tell you this. We had a music director, and his we called him the rabbi. He was Orthodox Jewish guy, but he loved heavy metal. And he wore a yarmulke every day and all that stuff. And he came in to me one day. He goes, Pierre, I got an idea. He would go to all these metal concerts and be in the mosh pit. And I like it, but I'm known for liking the Dead and stuff. So he goes, if you will come to a super metal show with me, I will go to a Dead show with you. I go, you're on. So the super metal show is f***ing Slayer. So I go, don't invite me to the party if you don't expect me to attend. So I got all butched up, and I went, you know, we brought the microphones, and we did the whole thing, you know, and I'm interviewing the metal folks. It's all music to me. It's, I don't really define it in those categories. It's music. But I'd never seen them, and it's just like, holy shit, this is intense. And then we're down and watching, and I go, I'm going in the mosh pit. And I go, no. No, you can't. I go, I'm going in the goddamn mosh pit. And with the microphone, I went in, and I started circling around. Whap! I got thrown down. But this giant man who looked like Hagrid from Harry Potter picks me up. And he goes, Pierre, you're with me now. And he carries me around in a circle. And then somebody says, you want to go up? I go, yes, I want to go up. And they hoisted my 57-year-old ass up at the time. And I crowd surfed across the Slayer audience. That's so amazing. I've done it. I've been there. Yes. And I've done that.
He stuck his head between my legs and put me on his shoulders and held me there for 6 seconds. For
real.
I was like, okay, you can let me down there. He's like, kill me. How's the view? I was like, well, it's pretty awesome. It was just me and a bunch of chicks up above everybody else.
Jared was literally like the most uncomfortable face I've ever seen on anyone. He was like, okay, let me down. The guy was like dancing around with Jared on his shoulders.
Jared's like, put me down. The guy's like, no, it's my time.
All right, we got some songs to play for you guys. Thank you again for waiting. We'll find a way out of here. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to change that thing out, and then we're going to bring you Cage the Elephant.
Oh! Thank you guys so much for coming out on a big day for us. You got to hear us blow the liners or whatever. Now you can go back and listen to us blow an interview. That was great. Thank you, Pierre.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.